This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, covering Ipswich Town since 2015. I'm Richard Woodward and you are tuned in to the flagship show, available each week on podcast, audio and video. Joining me this week, a return to fitness for David Diamond, and trying his best to keep himself fit, Joe Fares. Gentlemen, how are we doing? Dave, let's start with you. You've been under the weather, haven't you?
Yeah, had a touch of COVID for the last couple of weeks, out of nowhere. I have no idea. Although reading back on the forum, there was a bit of a spike at the Doncaster game, apparently, which would be 3 weeks ago now. But certainly in areas nowhere near me. But anyway, no idea. Fortunately, I've had it as bad as I could have done. So yeah, got released back in the community again on Friday. Mrs. D is released today, so yeah, much relief. But yeah, just nasty really, but yeah, could have been worse, I think.
No, well, we're very happy to have you back and good to see
you
as well.
Cheers,
and, guys. And Joe, you're basically, man, the vaccine's obviously doing the trick for you. Team AstraZeneca.
Yeah, no, I'm dicing with exposure at the moment. There's cases floating very close to me at the moment, but my daily tests are coming up negative at the moment, so hopefully they stay that way.
Fingers crossed the vaccine do. So we can't get it over the internet, can we? I think maybe that's the secret. Maybe that's what the scientists have failed to figure out. So, we'll keep our 2 meter distance over the interweb. We will be talking about Cambridge, more probably the aftermath of Cambridge and what it means. Plenty of questions from folks out there in the real world, which is fantastic. So plenty to discuss. Let's deal with some bits and pieces of news to start with. And I guess positive news to start us off with, Dave, because a few years ago, Marcus Evans disbanded the Community Trust, quite an unpopular move. And Mark Ashton, we know, is someone who takes the community aspect of football clubs very seriously. And on Friday, I think it was, some appointments to the Community Trust board, as it were, or trustees, as it were. Matt Holland, Mr. Ipswich, forwards Connor Chaplin, and forward for the ITFC women's team, Natasha Thomas, joins as trustees, as I mentioned. Mark Ashton said, a really important day for the club and the community trust. I've talked since I arrived in June about the importance of the community and the community being at the centre of everything the club does. So a really exciting thing there, and great to see, you know, the academy is really underrated by Marcus Evans, wasn't it? So it's really good to have Mark Ashton running with the stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think Marcus Evans made many unpopular decisions, as we know, and I think that probably just about topped the list. I think it was really not well received. I think Matt Holland, I mean, and great that, you know, Matt Holland, as you said, Mr. Ipswich through and through. We all know his passion for the club. I think he held a similar position, maybe not in the old maybe not the old community trust,
wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. With Terry Baxter's involved, isn't it? I think Terry Baxter's the chairman or whatever, CEO, whatever he is of Inspire Suffolk. I believe he is. So yeah, you know, you can't doubt his passion for the club, and yeah, it's a good step forward. Clearly, it's something that's dear to Mark Gashton's heart, and you know, I assume it was very much, you know, very much that way. You know, during his time at Bristol City as well. So yeah, you know, another positive step for the club, really.
Yeah, and this board of trustees, according to Ashton, will help set the strategic vision for the trust while also helping to drive it forward. And certainly, Connor Chapman, I've not heard a huge amount from Connor Chapman himself. He spoke really well.
That was an interesting one.
Natasha Thomas, a great appointment, obviously a very big kind of focal point, particularly externally for the ITFC women's team.
Yeah, is she not? And, I didn't realise that. Is she not the current, she's not that record goal scorer?
Yeah.
Connor Chaplin was an interesting one, because you say, I really don't seem to hear a lot about, you know, about him or from him to, you know, to date so far. Yes, I think he was put forward for the press, I believe, perhaps to coincide with this last, you know, last week. But yeah, an interesting one.
And we'll keep an eye on that. I mean, I dug this out because I couldn't really tell you specifically what the Community Trust does. And as all good organisations do, they've got a website which talks about vision and so on. But in a nutshell, they set up to deliver an innovative range of football and sporting activities to engage and inspire and develop as many people as possible, a registered charity to represent Ipswich Town within the local and surrounding communities, an extension of the club, to engage with local people to make a genuine impact on their lives, currently engaging with around 6,000 young people and vulnerable adults each week. So some excellent work being done there. I wish them all the best, and the trustees, hopefully they'll give us a good impetus and vision.
Yeah, because I think Jason Curtis, who's the chief executive of the trust, or the MD of the trust who runs it, he was doing a similar, I think he worked at Ipswich previously, then went to Norwich to do a similar role, and part of sort of relaunching the trust when Leo Neal and Marcus Evans did it was to sort of poach him back from there to try and effectively get Norwich off our patch. So he's the guy running it.
Right. So we'll...
That experienced guy.
There you go, yeah. And it's good. I think Marcus Evans really misunderstood having good people in the organisation, didn't he? So certainly the recruitment...
Having any people.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone... if people... could see behind the scenes, I don't think anyone would believe just how skeleton of staff was in place at the club.
I think
there were times where at Portman Road in the main, there was more Marcus Evans group staff utilising the office space at Portman Road than there was Ipswich Town staff.
Yeah.
And if you look back at a programme from like the year 2000 when we were in the Premier League, and you look at the Community Trust page in there, there's about 40 staff there. And that was probably down to about 4 staff by the time Evans had left. It was just in every part of the club was just
decimation,
cut down to the bare bone. And sort of, I know we're going a little bit off topic here, but sort of Leo Neal, basically he's got about 5 people in doing the job he was doing last season, effectively.
Yeah, well,
because basically he was doing Mark Ashton's role, Luke Werhan's role, this, as we'll come on to, Probert's role, his role. So Brian Klug is now sort of stepped down from there. Dave Bowman was there, but Leo Neal was doing all, basically every off-field role was his.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Gary Probert then, because that was the other announcement made end of last week, joining as Director of Football Operations on November the 1st. Probert joins the club, having previously been, guess where? Bristol City, and appointed by Mark Ashton as well. I'm looking forward to getting started. He told the website. I think it's a really exciting project to find out about and add some value to play a part in. Interesting, I guess, the dynamic here, Joe, with Leo Neal. You mentioned him and what his role is, but yeah, what's your observations here?
Well, he's effectively become Leo Neal's boss, hasn't he, now? Because when you look at the sort of the club release, it says he will head up the club's recruitment, academy, analysis, under-23s and loans programme. Well, Leo Neal is the academy manager, so you'd imagine that he will be reporting into him effectively from the academy side of it. There's going to be recruitment team put in place below him, but it's a really big job, really. It's probably the biggest, outside Mark Ashton, it's the biggest job we have. It's a director of football role, isn't it, there? And I know it says director of football operations, but no, it's a huge job. And this is one of the things last year when sort of people talking about who is qualified for this sort of role. And it's interesting that basically Lee O'Neill's equivalent at Bristol City is a person who's got the role. The academy manager from Bristol City has come across with a big promotion to take on a huge amount of it there. So what experience has he got in senior recruitment? Probably very little, because he's been on the academy side of it. So hopefully he seems to have had a good record at Gary Probe, but I spoke to a few Bristol City fans and their view was, this is the first member of the Bristol City staff that they're actually disappointed to see leave.
Right,
okay. So after Mark Ashton, Luke Wehrhahn, Andy Rolls, they've sort of been glad to see the back of them, but they're actually disappointed with Gary Probert leaving. So
and how much
tells you something.
How much of an advantage do you think? I mean, he's mentioned it. Obviously, there are a lot of people that he know. That relationship and trust and understanding is already there, isn't it? Which I guess helps him get up to speed a lot quicker. Though, Dave, is it any part of you a little bit? We've got a question about Peter Reid. We spoke about him on the pre-match show as well. It does appear that our manager appoints a certain demographic of person, and so does Mark Ashton. Does that worry you at all? Or, Bristol City, obviously, until maybe a couple of seasons ago, had been on an upward trajectory, hadn't they?
So absolutely.
Does the Bristol City basically just being plonked in the Ipswich structure concern you any at all?
I don't think it does, and it does. I mean, it's pleasing to hear Joe say that, because there's all been sort of banter between Bristol City, Bristol City fans on Twitter and everything else since Ashton and one or two of the others come across. So it's really heartening to hear Joe say that, we've made this appointment, and it's certainly that's an appointment that hasn't gone down well there, and he's very well, obviously quite well respected. So that's a positive thing if that's the case, then. Absolutely fine. As for our manager Paul Cook, well, it's more of a geographical demographic,
yeah.
And continues to be so. So I see this as a positive appointment. Where that quite leaves, as Joe said, Lee O'Neill, well, yeah, obviously with a much diminished workload from last season, by the sound of it.
It does.
But the academy needs a top manager, and that's what got him the role, effectively the bigger role. So I'm sure he's probably just overpaid for the role at the moment now, if he was being paid for his previous role. But the academy is such an important place, and it needs a proper full-time manager, and it's not a job that can be done as part of a job share. So it should be a good thing for the academy that we've got a highly respected manager focusing purely on that. But
yeah,
I guess the thing that I'd say with regards to all the Bristol City people, they were an upwardly mobile club, but it's not like we've gone and nicked the staff of Brentford or someone like that. They've achieved huge amounts. It seems like, I don't think anyone would say, oh, Bristol City, if you could get their staff, you're going to fly up the table.
No, they've got to reach a certain plateau.
They sort of reached a plateau and
didn't
really get close to the Premier League, did they? I don't think they ever got into the playoffs and the Championship. And they might have been there or thereabouts. But no, it seems a interesting club to sort of go after all this staff from. You'd think if you were doing an open recruitment selection, you wouldn't just end up with all people from one staff. But Ashton clearly rates and trusts these guys and has brought them all over with him, and hopefully they can have bigger success here than they did at Bristol City.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It's good as well to have that structure off the field that isn't as contingent on the manager to set the tone, which has been an issue before, isn't it? Where basically all of the backroom staff is kind of churned whenever a manager is left. So that will provide some continuity if and when something else happens with whoever's in the dugout. Talking of which, guys, let's jump up the A14 to Cambridge. And let's talk about some team news, shall we? And I guess maybe an eyebrow raised a few on Twitter when this team selection was announced. Let's put it up on the screen there. And I guess decisions made without the benefit of inside information, which only became available after the fixture. The first bit of news, and actually I don't want to blow my own trumpet again about the pre-match show, but we did hint at Ilmazuni possibly coming in to add a little bit more physicality into the centre of midfield alongside Morsi, and that proved to be the case, not only as a consequence, I suspect, of Tom Carroll's unavailability, but Lee Evans, whose wife gave birth to a child yesterday. So congratulations to them, and we're wishing them all the very best as well. Someone who we know has been nursing an injury for the last few weeks is Wes Burns, and presumably he was dropped to the bench to give him a bit of a rest before Portsmouth on Tuesday, and it's Sione Aluko who gets an opportunity to shine on the right side of our three-man attacking midfield. Otherwise, it's as you were, and on the bench, Bersenslina able to return to the bench for following international duty, and unfortunately no Joe Piggott, whose father sadly passed away yesterday as well on Saturday. So again, our thoughts are with him and his family. No James Norwood on the bench, so Caden Jackson comes in. No information about the Norwood situation. But guys, Dave, what was your thoughts on those two bits of selection changes?
Yeah, Aluko was an interesting one, because I know he, you know, he's a little, you know, one or two little cameos he has showed up quite well in. I think it was a Bolton home game, was it? But I think I wasn't there; I was on holiday. Apparently, he's been, so we understand, been absolutely flying in, you know, flying in training. So, yeah, and perhaps not such a shock after all. El Mizuni for, interesting one there. I would have perhaps thought, good shout from you, obviously, on the pre-match show again, but I would have perhaps felt Harper maybe in there, but, yeah. You know, does he give more physicality than Harper? Maybe, perhaps he's perhaps a bit more, kind of put defensively astute, should we say? But, yeah, that was that kind of an interesting one for me, both really.
As for Cambridge, again, no real surprises for them. We were expecting a returning Wes Hooland to return to their midfield, and their system effectively rejigs. It's still typically a kind of a flat 4-5-1, and Hooland, I guess, a roaming attacking midfielder there in the centre. So he comes back in against an Ipswich team that I guess is utterly unfamiliar to him, but he's a player who's got that X factor that we know of, who can make stuff happen.
It must have felt quite familiar at the end of the game when we just just crumbled.
Yeah, capitulation's familiar, isn't it?
What is quite interesting there, Rich, is you put out the average age of the side. Bloody hell, take Houlihan out of their side.
Yeah, it's quite a young.
Replace him with a 21-year-old. That's quite a difference there.
Yeah. He came back in for Liam O'Neill, who a sitter who missed the 18 entirely, so not sure the situation there. Okay. Jack Lancaster had made his first start for Cambridge injured. Since joining, but unfortunately for him, injured and unable to face his old club. So Shiloh Tracy returns at right wing. And a note there of ex-ITFC-ness, Paul Digby, captain, one-time Ipswich defender, now a Cambridge midfielder. So interesting to see them line up to effectively face off like for like with us. We'd spoken on the pre-match show about how Cambridge have not scored a goal in the first 15 minutes of matches this season. They're quite slow starters, and Ipswich would come out of the blocks flying. A really good opportunity for Chapman straight away. Cut back from Bond, and Chapman kind of really weird angle and shape to this attempt, which he slices high and wide. But another minute later, he's having a shot just wide of the post. But Joe, 10 minutes, Ipswich will take the lead, and it starts from a long goal kick that's headed back from where it came from Burgess. And talk us through what happens next.
Yeah, but we sort of put a bit of pressure on them at that point, and we were sort of pushing them quite high and up the pitch. And even the goal kick, I know it's not a huge amount of pressure, but Macaulay Bonn is there sticking him under a bit of pressure to do it. And he doesn't really get it much past the halfway line. Burgess gets up, wins a big header on it, puts it a long way up the pitch to the fullback, and Aluko just pressures him. And as the guy clears it, just Aluko gets a block in, it flies up, and Aluko sort of passed him, and the ball just sits up beautifully for him there. It sort of couldn't have sat up any better, and he just, cool as you like, just lifts it over the keeper, and it's one in the away end. It's, you just sit there waiting for the net to bulge because you have no idea where the ball is going, and it just, like I say, he couldn't have finished it any better, and it was a brilliant start. Here we go, 1-0 on the road.
And we know that we were discussing Cambridge's defensive frailties, and you saw that there. I mean, big question marks about Masterson, who's fluffed clearance sets up the problems. But I don't know what the keeper's doing. Mitov, on the replay, he's fallen over, I think, and gets up as Aluko's lobbing him, isn't he? So he's going to have some moments, the keeper Mitov, during this game. But as you say, Luca,
no man's land, I think he ended up in.
Yeah, it was. Thank you for the cliche, Joe. Yeah, I appreciate that one. Yeah, it's really good value for the lead, and the dominance continues for the majority of the half. I mean, some half chances, as I would call them, throughout. There's nothing where the keeper really has to make any strong saves. But again, he's going to be in the centre of the action on 34, gets caught out high up outside of his goal by Chaplin, makes an iffy clearance that falls to Aluko. And Joe, if you were thinking about when's the net going to bulge on this one, you might have had similar thoughts about this effort, but he never really gets...
No, you could tell from the reaction of the players that it wasn't... Because at first, like, here we go, because you could see it well over the keeper, but you could see Aluko looked really disappointed with it straight away, and a couple of players did around him. So despite not having the best angle, you could tell quite quickly that wasn't going in. But that would have been nice, wouldn't it? 60
probably,
yards.
Yeah, rushed it a little bit. But yeah, two very opportune goals, perhaps a little bit stretching it. And Macaulay Bond, I think, might have been screaming for the ball in all kinds of space over on the left-hand side. But you can't blame Aluko for having a Jim Majorta moment, can you really? But Dave, the lead would be doubled only a couple of minutes after that situation, and it's a set piece.
Yeah, well, and it's a good delivery. I've got to say, it's a good delivery from there on the right from Cambridge right from Fraser. Really good, nice in swinging corner for once with some pace on it. Edmondson should really score. Edmondson should really score from about what, 3 yards probably. So it gets a decent header on it. Fortunately, hits the post and falls out to Aluko from a similar position, really. sort of scuffs his left foot shot back, but he's so close to goal, it just goes in off the keeper. So not a classic, but yeah, a good delivery from Fraser, you've got to say. Edmondson should score, but yeah, we get a bit fortunate there that falls to Aluko, but got to be there to put him in. So 2-0, looking good.
Yeah, and the keeper comes flapping for that corner as well.
He does.
He didn't have a good game.
Yeah, he does flap a bit there. But yeah, like I say, Edmondson, I suppose, on the face of it, will be disappointed that he didn't add to his goal against Doncaster.
I didn't think he'd made a connection on it when I saw it in real time.
No, but it makes a pretty decent connection, really. Yeah.
I think it hits the post, I think.
I thought the corner just swung and hit the post, but obviously I'm wrong.
I need to check back there.
No, he does get ahead on it. Yeah, sure he does. Okay. Yeah.
But, Joe, it's all going to fall apart. And I think the frailty, you kind of hope, because we've now got a two-goal lead as opposed to the one-goal lead that we threw away very quickly against Shrewsbury, that you think that now we're going to see this out of Cambridge heads down. But we've, I guess, under it. And Paul Cook has bigged up the game as a derby match and all that kind of stuff, which I don't think I necessarily buy into, but it was a really valid point made on the pre-match show that Cambridge fans would see it as a derby game, and we travelled in big numbers, so it did have that feel to it. And to be fair to Cambridge, they come back into this first half despite having been second best throughout, but there's a lot of support from Ipswich's defence for this goal that they score. It starts with Ironside in absolute acres down our left hand side with Penny pushed well up the pitch. Do you want to take it from here? It kind of cuts in, it plays it to Houlihan and Tracy and so on. But, I mean, this is a defensive aberration, isn't it?
Well, it all starts from a sort of nothing long ball. And Cameron Burgess is up against Joe Ironside. And rather than just try and sort of hold him up, he just allows himself to be... It's like he tries to win every single ball that goes up there. And sometimes you just need to just sort of stand your ground and try and stop the attack. You can't win everything. And this is sort of part of the game management I was sort of been speaking about, that when you're 2-0 up, you do not need to keep defending aggressively on the front foot. You just need to make sure that they don't do anything. And Ironside just uses his body, spins him. Yeah, there's a chance it might get blown up for a foul. It looked like it could be sort of in front of us. It was right in front of the terrace that I was in there. But it's just weak. It's overcommitted defending, it's just weak, and then all of a sudden the game's just totally opened up and we're at sort of the proverbial sixes and sevens, really. Danasian has to come inside because obviously Burgess is out of the game, Penny's out of the game, he comes inside and it gets worked across quite nicely and ends up with Brophy, who just sort of just smashes it past Ladke and it goes in off the underside of the bar, sort of 6 inches higher, and that's hitting the bar and going out. So again, but as has happened so many times this season, the first chance we concede ends up in the back of our net, and it's just game on again. And it's the same in the AFC Wimbledon game. You're 2-0 up and should be cruising, and then you just give away a sloppy goal and it's 2-1. Then all of a sudden, the game is a game that should be being put to bed. It's just not, because of, again, poor game management. 2-0 up, just sit it till half time, get it sorted, come out, reorganised. But we I don't know. Paul Cook says he isn't going to. I know I'm sort of going off the point here, but Paul Cook said he isn't going to shut up shop. Well,
shut up shop for five minutes before half time, maybe.
Yeah, this is what's going to keep happening.
It's yeah, Burgess. Joe's right. It's Burgess. He doesn't need to make that challenge there. You know, he doesn't need to nip in front of Ironside and win the ball there. You just stand off him. Just stand off him. What's he going to do? He's not going to roll you. If you stand off him, he's not going to roll you. He's going to have to bring the ball down, and then, you know, you can get players around. It's basic defending there.
And there's a lot of this goal that, let's give credit to Cambridge. It's a really nice
It's a well-worked goal.
Houlihan's at the centre of it, but to me, the positioning of the entire team in a defensive phase is really poor, because not only have you got, you know, we know that the fullbacks are going to push on. I thought that maybe we'd tempered some of that attacking intent from the fullbacks a little bit in recent weeks, but Penny is well out of position here and actually doesn't do a huge amount to prevent the ball when it gets fed to Houlihan. And what we do is we all crowd around Houlihan. We've obviously been told, watch out for Houlihan. He's going to be
clever play from Houlihan.
He just does a little slip pass to I think Tracy. It's Sade Tracy.
Tracy, absolute acres.
But because everyone's come to the ball and come to Houlihan, Brophy's got acres of space.
Elmizuni's are not in a great position. Tracy's ball just takes out both Danasian and Elmizuni. Yeah. And I've got to say, it's a good finish. It is a good finish, to be fair. He doesn't take, you know, he waits for it. And, you know, if he hits it low, Lackey probably saves that because he comes out and the goalkeeper's not in a bad position there. But, you know, he hits it high with power. Good finish.
Is Lackey a little bit slow off his line?
Do you think he goes down too early? I don't know. Maybe he tries to anticipate. Maybe he tries to anticipate. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know.
But I think it goes back to the game.
It's a good finish. I think even if Lackey stands up there, he doesn't save that.
Like when Penny's down the other end of the pitch, if you're the centre-half, you need to do enough to hold the ball up to allow your defence to retreat, not to try and just get straight back on the attack.
Because
it all comes from that. Ironside spins Penn and Burgess, and then they are they're like 3-4 on two at that point. And we just... I say trying to desperately get back, and it's just about having a brain and defending properly when you're not in a brilliant team shape. Effectively, you need to make sure that if you're not in a team shape, you just got to do the basics and get it sorted so you can get back into sort of back through your transition.
Have what you hold.
Yep, and he'll be waiting for this. So hello to Seb Brown, who's quote on the pre-match show. He's the one cursing opposition players this week with greatness. Brophy has no end product, quote. So there you go, off and running. He does have an effort in the second half, which isn't as well struck. But Ipswich have turned a very dominant first half position and given the crowd, as well as the opposition, a real chance to build in the second half.
You go into half time on the back foot. You just do. No matter how dominant you've been, you just do.
Yeah. If you're a Cambridge fan, you come into half time. It's game on, isn't it? 2-1.
Yeah.
You've got a bit of the intensity. Absolutely game on.
Their manager doesn't have to say anything. Hardly. He doesn't have to say anything. You know, he's already said that, you know, Ipswich are whatever, I don't know, described as like a thoroughbred side in the league or whatever he described as that. You don't need any more than that. 2-1, right, lads, we're right in this. Come on, you know, you can see they're going to go, you know, and he can probably point to five previous games where they've been ahead. And, you know, Wimbledon's a classic, as Joe said, they've got that in them. Now, you know, get at them second half and just they'll not crumble, but they just won't, you know, they'll retreat. And exactly what happened.
And not a huge amount changes in the second half for me. There's a lot of chat about the attacking possession that we had, but I'm struggling to remember a very suspect goalkeeper in Mitov having to do anything in second half. There are lots of chances that went wide.
A lot of possession.
But not many crosses into the box. I thought Bonn and Chaplin didn't really... Bonn
was off it yesterday.
Yeah, went on each other's way.
He's not going to play brilliantly every game, but I thought he was off it yesterday.
He was running
offside. It's a shame we didn't have Piggott or Norwood on the bench to sort of make a change and try and freshen things up. But like I said, there was a good period in that second half, for sort of good 20, 25 minutes. And like I say, I was in that terrace on the side and the whole game was in front of us. We were pinning them back in their half and moving the ball quickly. I thought Luko, Chaplin and Fraser, all three of those were getting on the ball in good positions. But when you look back at it, did we have a single shot from that? I think Elmizuni had one from the edge of the box, which just hit the first man. Like I said, there was a couple of crosses flashed over. I can't even remember many shots going wide or anything, really. I just thought there was a couple pulled back. I said we had a good, I don't know your sort of sofa score,
I'm on there now. Yeah.
The game thing, but we had a good 20, 25 minute period there.
There you go.
Yeah. And like I said, I was just. But in that time, did we have a shot?
So I'm just trying to dig out the stats from SofaScore as well for the difference between the first and the second half. So in the first half, 12 shots for Ipswich, only two of those on target. Wow. Four block shots, six off target. Second half, four shots, one on target, two off target, one blocked. The possession's consistent, about 55%. But overall, I think that really tells the story. And that graph, the attacking momentum graph, that's what Joe was talking about, which we can see at the moment, has this kind of this Ipswich Town very deep amount of possession and attacking intensity from about 50 to 60 odd 65 minutes, and then we just pack up, don't we? And as you say, Joe, for all of that attacking intent, there's possession in their final third, perhaps, but it's very much like Roy Hodgson's England or Chris Hughton's.
I don't know. I thought we looked a good side then. I thought we moved the ball about where and
but it's around the side. It's around the 18 yard
without that final ball. Yeah, which is what I mean. Worked it there, but it was just, I don't know. We'd pinning them back. The fullbacks were pushing on, and they just couldn't get out. But we just couldn't do anything with it. It's sort of when push came to shove, actually creating that final chance, we just weren't able to.
And in the second half, to me, there's a chance on 51 for Ironside, who seemed to have got the better of Burgess for most of the game, and Hladke actually makes a save with his legs on that one. I mentioned Brophy on 81 minutes, hits very high and wide from a very presentable opportunity after Hladke flaps at Hulan's cross. But Dave, the momentum, I'm talking about the attacking momentum. I'll put the graph back up here. You can see this big Cambridge chunk around the 88th minute.
See it coming on, can't you? Just wait. You're waiting for it. I think Craig said on our WhatsApp group, you know, you're just waiting for it to happen, really. Waiting for it to happen.
And it's, you know, similar to Fraser's set piece. Goal again.
It is really. I think May takes a kick wide left, you know, right foot. Swings it to the back post, and again, Burgess is beaten too easily for me. I mean, you know, you see him after the event sort of saying that maybe, you know, he was, you know, pushed down shoulders, but he gets beaten.
He's 6'4". You've got to get up.
I know. He just gets beaten. He's static, Joe. He's static. He gets beaten far too easy on the far post. Good header by, is it Jones? Heads it back into a good area. And again, then we're flat. Ironside gets a jump on Edmondson. Lagkey, don't know what he's doing. He falls over. You look again, or is he impeded there? Don't really think so. If he is, perhaps by our player, maybe Edmondson. And Ironside just wants it more. Heads it in, simple, from about, what, 2 or 3 yards. It's such a disappointing goal. And again, you know, Burgess, he's not punching his weight there in the air, is he? Joe said 6'4". He's got to get up there. You know, no situation. You get up there and you get something on the ball. You head it out. You know, you head it behind, head it out. He's just, you know, overpowered by Jones at the back post, who just gets a run on him. Shouldn't happen. Yeah. Should not happen.
You can't allow that header like that if you're 6'4".
No,
you'd expect when a centre forward is peeling off onto a fullback, isn't it? There's a
case in point there when the ball's nodded back in the box. Would a substitute 6'9" keeper perhaps have made a better,
Ironside gets up and wins. He's only about 5'9" himself.
Yeah, he wants it more, Joe, doesn't he? Just wants it more. He gets a run perhaps on Edmondson and the defenders, and Edmondson's perhaps flat, and he just gets a run on him, and he wants it more.
In the pre-match show, you guys mentioned that he's sort of like a Joe Garner sort of player, and you could really see that. He sort of
puts
his body well, gets a lot of free kicks, or tries to get a lot of free kicks, puts about, defenders don't like playing him. But I thought, again, I don't want to keep digging out the same player as I did sort of the last 2 weeks, but Cameron Burgess just has not improved us defensively at all. Other than, I don't see he's an improvement on Toto Ntiala at the moment.
We haven't got to the subs, have we? I mean,
we've got a question on both of those points, actually, the subs and Burgess. So let's maybe hold our thought on that one. We've got maybe a question about the goalkeeper as well. So maybe I'll hold my thought here. But I thought Hladke was back to his erraticness yesterday, and I think the trouble I've got, and it's not necessarily his height, Dave. I just don't think there's anything commanding about him when the balls come into our area.
He should be just flattening everyone, shouldn't he? You've just got no confidence, have you? Just got no confidence watching him. You know, where does that leave us? You know, well, no, Dale probably will play at Portsmouth, but you know, we got clearly going back to pre-Bolton, you know, the manager's not happy with either goalkeeper, so he signs Walton, who, you know, immediately lets in five. I wasn't at the game, admittedly, probably none really his fault that day. I mean, defence was just absolutely got torn to shreds that day. But you know, where does that leave us goalkeeper wise? Presumably Hagley still be there. It wasn't glaring errors yesterday, but he just doesn't inspire with confidence at all.
No, he doesn't. Let me give you some post-match quotes before we jump into some plugs and then into the questions. Paul Cook, I guess Cook's great when you win in terms of his post-match, but not so good when we lose. And there's a lot of stating the obvious, a lot of generalizations. You know, unfortunately, we've got an Achilles heel in us. That's there for everyone to see. Goals for is not a problem. Goals against is a big concern. Well, yeah, tell us about it. This is something that I'll come to both of you on very quickly. Since I've been manager at Ipswich, I've learned that you're never comfortable in a game. No matter what we're doing, you're not comfortable. And I get that suggests a mentality, doesn't it? This is an entirely new set of personnel that don't have the mental baggage of Paul Lambert's Ipswich team, nor perhaps Paul Hurst or Mick McCarthy latterly. What does that point say?
It's different. Really sure. You probably hit the nail on the head. You know, these. So it's six times, I think, now. Six times have been ahead.
Yeah, I've got
six
this,
times
yeah.
been ahead. And you know,
it's more
and,
than that. I thought we dropped 18 points from winning.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. This goes back, I think, you know, to McCarthy. McCarthy team. Look, the football was horrific. Let's just, you know, old hands. The football was horrific. But McCarthy's team just had more character in that, and you just never saw that. Well, I'm sure it did, but not to this extent. It just didn't happen. And why? Because perhaps we were dour, and we're just much better organised defensively. I honestly think that's what it is. And you're right. You know, there shouldn't be that mental fragility, because this is a whole completely new group of players. But it's the same old thing, and you can just see it happen. As soon as that goal went in, and I wasn't there. I was sort of recovering, listening to it on the radio. As soon as that goal went in before half time, you just know it. And why, you know, as Joe said, yeah, we had a lot of possession, but were we really that much on the front foot? It's easy to play like that. And I think I said yesterday, you know, these players have got to be brave and bloody step up, you know. Really.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across six different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Step up.
And Joe, I'm going to come to you on this because you quoted this to us earlier on in the pod. I wanted, I guess, to reflect on the word, the phrase, since I've been manager at Ipswich. And maybe there's something about defensive organisation and mindset into games. But asked about thinking about making more defensive-minded substitutions to shore things up at 2-1. He got, ironically, quite defensive. When you sit here and your results go against you, sometimes for us it doesn't matter what we do. It just doesn't. We put Carl Edwards, Selena Wesburns on. Our intent was to score again. Unfortunately for us, credit to Cambridge, not to us, we didn't look like scoring. It's easy to sit there and then say what you should do. As a manager, I've never believed in shutting up shop. Those are the quotes you put to us, Joe. It's not my style. We travel as Ipswich Town and we should score again in the second half. Unfortunately for us, we never. What does that What does that say to you, Joe? To me, that's...
It's incredibly naive, isn't it?
It is
incredibly
naive. That's the word.
But like when you look at Paul Cook's record previously, when Wigan won the title 2018, 46 games, they conceded 29 goals. We've played 12 games, we conceded 21 goals. Look at Wigan this season and see who their manager is, Liam Richardson. 7 goals they've conceded in 11 games. Well, I know that there's been a huge amount of talk about Liam Richardson. Is he missed? Well, that tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Liam Richardson knows how to shut a game down. They went to Bolton yesterday and won 4-0. We lost 5-2 to them at home. I know the league throws up funny results, but there's just certain things that just really just hammer home what is going on here. And it's defensively, we're in absolute shambles, isn't it? It's not. We've got the joint. There's not a team in the league with a worse defence than us. Doncaster, who's put 6 past, have let in less goals than we have.
I have, yeah. It's three identical 21 goals.
So you look at the subs yesterday, and I thought Aluko was starting to struggle, and I thought Burns came on and did help us in that regard.
No problem.
He was getting back and helping Danasian, and I think that because they sort of Iredale and Brophy down their left were causing us problems. And I think Burns coming on did help that. So I think that's the right move. Selina for Chaplin. Again, I thought Chaplin was playing well. Get Selina on, but it's just that last sub, isn't it? Fraser, who'd been quite involved, was getting on the ball quite a lot. He take him off, and at that point in the game, we're just not landing on the ball in the middle of the pitch at all. We're just not getting there. Selina had been poor, really. He'd given the ball away 2 or 3 times. And let's say Paul Cook, that's not his fault. He's sent on a player who is a quality player who just hasn't got into the game. But at that point, for me, if you're taking off Scott Fraser, well, you stick Bersant Selina there, you get Rakeem Harper on and just chuck another body in that midfield just to try and get on the ball there, because we were just simply not getting on the ball. I know people saying, oh, maybe you can bring Toto on and stick another at the back. Personally, not for me. You just need another centre mid in there. You put Kyle Edwards on, and did he touch the ball 2 or 3 times? We couldn't get on the ball, so you're putting on a player who is totally reliant on the ball being got to him, effectively. He's not someone that goes and gets the ball. He's someone that you give him the ball and let him do things with it. He's got no real defensive capabilities. He'll work hard and he'll run his sort of doggies and whatever you need to do, but he's not a defensive minded player there. And it was just a baffling sub. And around me, everyone's just like, trying to score another goal.
It's just a baffling sub on 80 when it happened on 83 minutes.
You didn't need
minutes,
another goal,
you know?
At that point. When the way the game was going, we needed to stop them effectively. And like I say, you just showed the attacking charts from SofaScore. It's just building and building there. And so we needed to do something to stem that flow. And what do? We bring on a winger for a more sort of defensive minded player. And Fraser, I know he's not a defender, but he is sort of someone that sits in, and you put on someone who's got chalk on their boots and stands on the touchline.
I thought the central midfield really didn't help us yesterday in a defensive sense at all. I think Morsi had a good enough first half, but second half, to me, there was a lot of... I think he got a lot of heavy treatment.
Well, Mills was saying first half about Morsi, who just had loads of space to play. They were just letting him play. They said, you know,
He won the ball a number of times, but he didn't get on the ball well enough.
He stopped short of saying Houlihan was sort of cheating. Basically first half, and just not picking up Morsi at all. He was just pressing on and on and on, obviously looking to find that position, you know, which he did in the end of the first half, which he did find that position in that little hole, which he was able to construct the move that led to the goal. But yeah, you know, we were told these results weren't supposed to, you know, this sort of thing weren't supposed to happen. A lot of pressure on Morsi, but it's incredibly, incredibly frustrating result. Yet again, as Joe said, you know, you lose 18 points. 18 points from winning position.
Is it 18? I'd only got...
I'm not sure it is, but it's six games. We've been ahead in 6 games.
So this is my research, so caveat that it might be incorrect.
Yeah, and that might be a lot.
I've got defeat to Cheltenham, draw with MK Dons, draw with AFC Wimbledon, defeat to Bolton. I've got West Ham in the under-21s, which obviously doesn't count in terms of points, but that was a 1-0 to a 2-1. Accrington, defeat. Cambridge, draw. That's 15 points for me.
I was getting up there. Yeah.
And that would have us on 29 points and clear at the top of the league.
Yeah, you're not going to get...
any of those decent... any of those what you describe as good sides?
No.
Sides that are going to be pushing promotion this season? You know, going to be in the top 8?
Just add 6 points onto our total, realistically, from those games, you know. and you are it's looking a hell of a lot better, but just incredibly frustrating. And you have got a question. Well, the manager tactic then, just the character of the players, for Christ's sake. Man, I think someone said, was it you, Joe? Man up, you know, you got to.
Well, we'll get to the questions in a second. Just a few plugs for next week. Obviously, if you want to listen back to the live Q&A that we did midweek with Craig and Joe, which was excellent, a bumper edition, still relevant, I'm sure, although possibly some Cambridge talk in there. Pre-match show still available as well, but listen to the Room 101 bit maybe and give us your vote for that. We'll be back in such a midweek action in the league, so we would probably consider a live reaction show like we did last season at full time. If not, it'll be the usual show on Wednesday, so we'll let you know about that, talking about Pompey versus Ipswich, which could be interesting. Our pre-match show looking ahead to Fleetwood will be out Friday morning. We won't be doing that live this week, and as always, the flagship back Sunday evening or Monday morning. We'll obviously let you know via our Twitter what the situation is there. Let's do some questions, guys. And I will do these in the order that we receive them, and I will start with Joe. Pablo Canuga asks, not a prayer we get close to promotion under Cook. Discuss, !
Yeah, I agree. We just, at the moment, the squad, we've bought in the players that should be good enough. We've got a manager whose record says he should be good enough, but for whatever reason, it's just not working. Teams do not get close to promotion with a defensive record that we've got. And it's just any time we come under a bit of pressure, a goal comes. It's normally from the first shot we concede in the game, later in the game. And like I said, we're not playing the top sides here. What do you think Rotherham are going to do to us? What do you think Wickham are going to do to us? Sides that just know how to win games at this level.
Plymouth.
I haven't seen any of Plymouth this year. I know they're top of the league, but Rotherham, Wickham, Sunderland, they've worked out Wigan. They know how to win games at this level, and those games are going to be a piss for them. It's going to be score a goal and just shut up shop, and we won't have any answer to it.
There's more questions on the manager in a minute, so we'll come back to those. FPL Tractor Dave, was it just me, or did those subs seem booked in before the start of the game? Felt to me a game at 60 minutes, and we talked about this to an extent, to stick Harper in midfield with his height and drive.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Joe, I totally agree with Joe. I think that, you know, the Burns substitution, totally understandable. Didn't have an issue with that. And as Joe said, he appeared to give us, you know, greater assistance for Danasian on the right there. But yeah, I'm just really struggling with the other two. And I think, yeah, you know, you throw Harper on there and he does give you that. As I said, he's not perhaps been the most defensively astute, but he does give you physicality in there, and he does land on the ball when he can keep the ball. So yeah, just strange one. And you know, it's the same old Cook thing. He's perhaps been a bit bullish and a bit disrespectful. Perhaps we should be with the squad we've got. Perhaps to these clubs who say, no, we're always, even if we are backs against the wall, no, it's my way. I'm going to throw these attacking players on and we're going to score a third goal. And as Joe quite rightly said, sometimes you just have to, you know, just consolidate, sit in there, get the 3 points. Go away, slightly disappointed. It's a crap second half performance, but you've got the 3 points, move on. That's how you get promoted.
Wouldn't it be great to shit house a victory, Dave?
Don't do that. But how often do we use that word in our chat? You know, that's how you need a lot of that to get out of this bloody division. You know, you won't, without that, you won't get out of it. You just won't.
And I know I'd sort of bang the drum on it a bit, but when you look at the record that he came in with last season, the away form last year, Wimbledon, Northampton, hammered there, Gillingham, we lost there. Rochdale sort of drew, and it's
Shrewsbury.
I mean, I don't know where, guys, I just don't know where he'd be. I just sort of caught up with the fixtures again this morning, and the next, you know, let's put Pompey away to one side for a minute. I mean, you know, they're not in the greatest of form, but the next three away games after that, we've got Plymouth and Wickham within the space of 3 days, and then we've got Sunderland getting towards the end of November, and the next three away games after Pompey.
But every single away game follows the same pattern. That we start okay, we look okay, we either score or we don't score, and then they just turn the game round. And then we're on the back foot. And we're on the back foot. And it happened with the players that he inherited last year. It's happening with the players that he's brought in this year. And at some point, and like I say, you listen to the post match comments yesterday, and it's the brainless comments, aren't they? I don't shut up shop. It's not what I do. I don't do that Ipswich. Well, away from home, you've got to win. You've got to win games. It's not about going out there putting on a footballing exhibition, because they're hardly that anyway, are they?
And it's the same old cliche comment, isn't it? You know, it goes back to training. Oh, we had a great week training. So what are you going to do about this, Paul?
Sorry. Alex Hayes, the next question is a great, that's a great segue, Dave. Thank you. I just want to stop you before you answered it. I think it's Joe's turn anyway, but you can start us on this. Alex Hare, Cook's response is, we need to work hard on the training ground. What exactly are they? Well, I guess we don't know the answer to exactly what they're doing in the training ground. They look like they have no idea what to do in phases of the game. At 2-0, they should be shutting the game up. We said that, but they just look so vulnerable. What, you know?
Defensive shape. It all comes down, as Joe said, at the end of the day, it comes down to bloody defensive shape and just cutting out those individual errors as such, but defensive shape and just switch these defenders, just switching on, you know?
Yeah.
What, I think it's shapes as much as
well, it is not.
Well, they shape as well, but it's also the style that they defend in as well, like the aggressiveness of the defending at times. It's like you can have the best shape in the world, but if you're going to go and try and overcommit yourself,
I agree. That's what I was getting to. It's being smart. It's being smart as well. No, you're absolutely right. There's no way. That was a classic that you point out. There is no way that Burgess. In the 40 minutes gone, we're in the ascendancy. There's no way he should. All right, he's feeling perhaps confident, but there's no way you should try and nip in front of Ironside and try and win that ball. You step away, and like I said, you get players around you, and he's got to then bring the ball down. Then you get organised, and the second phase of play starts. As soon as he turns Burgess there, we're done. Pretty much.
And you look at the game last week, Shrewsbury, Burgess again. As that happens to him again on the line, he gets just. Overcommits, it's totally spun. That time he drags the guy down and gets a yellow card. Later in the game, Edmondson overcommits the ball, goes over his head, drags the guy down, gets a yellow card.
You can't defend like that
when you're winning 2-1.
By all accounts, Edmondson was half decent yesterday, wasn't he?
Yeah, I thought he had a better game. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tractor Boy Pete asks, why don't we have any reliable defenders on the bench? I mean, it's pretty consistent that we only name one defender, and it's typically a centre-back rather than a full-back, noting that we've got injuries to Coulson.
Joe made that point as well about full-back at the start, didn't he, Joe? You know, you're a bit surprised that you're not seeing Vincent Young on the bench, aren't you? I am.
So, especially
Penny went into the game with a knock, didn't he? And that was probably his poorest game for us yesterday. So
thoughts on that point? Is that a similar... this kind of sentiment of we're just going to attack, we're going to win by attacking, we're not going to win by defending, and therefore I don't need defenders on the bench?
You just can't do it now. It's 2021 now. Every team is smart in how they set up. It's not like you have the best players you're going to win like it might have been 30 years ago. All these coaches, they're all done all their pro license, their badges. They know how to set a team up. They know how to work in transition and all the sort of boring sort of football lingo terms that they're
teams playing.
You don't turn up against the manager who's just going to line up 4-4-2 and sort of just try and beat you playing like that. They set themselves up to play against you. And I know, I say Portsmouth are on a sort of poor run of form, but Danny Cowley's not just going to... we're going to go 4-4-1-1 and lump it to the big man all game. They're going to know how to play against us, and I can't watch the game.
I know that's sort of died down a bit, but you know, with all the transfer shenanigans and went on in a close season, they're still going to be very, very up for that game, aren't they? Very up for that.
Jacobs, I don't know if Jacobs is fit. We'll look into that.
I'm not sure, but bloody
there
hell.
You go. There's someone who's going to be up for it as well. I mean, this is the meaty question. We've got three of these of a similar line. I mean, Tractor Boy Pete's asked it. Patrick Palmer's is probably the most detailed question along these lines. Who else has asked about it as well? I mean, Andy Mack, 21 years of crap. How many more? But Patrick's question, how much longer can we afford Cook's naivety? He's called that out as well. Our draws and defeats have all played out in a similar manner. It's one thing setting out a team to attack, but his defensive and off-the-ball tactics are genuinely not good. I'm paraphrasing. 15th will be useless. 15th will be us. Unless Cook can pull off a drastic upswing. So three people asking us how long Cook has got. Guys, what's your respect?
I mean, look, we said it who we've played so far. And, you know, you look at the next seven games, sort of starting with Portsmouth away. Okay, then we've got Fleetwood at home. Plymouth and Wickham away in those two or three days. Oxford at home. And Sunderland away, Rotherham at home. I mean, that takes us pretty much to the end of November. So, you know, do what you want. What you know, what points at the moment can you see us taking out of those games? So I don't know. You've seen all sorts of things bandied about. Oh, he's got till December. He's got till the new year. I mean, what is a, you know, what, I don't know. What is the board? You know, what are the owners going to be satisfied with? You know, I mean, by the end of these seven, look at we're playing. By the end of these next seven games, you know, the top two, perhaps the top two are gone anyway, but the top two or three are going to be over the hill and away. And you know, you look how the league is now. Okay, we're only 5 points behind, I think, MK in sixth place. Then with sixth to fifth goes another 4 points, so you're 9 points. So you know, pretty much by then, you still only could be playing for almost one playoff place, because at this moment in time, you cannot see this team showing any consistency to string three or four wins on the bounce, let alone five, six or seven, which is probably what we'll need. So, yeah, a difficult one that, but I think things will certainly be a lot clearer after these seven games, I would have thought. Who knows, you know, against the better sides, they may not, you know, perhaps they may be a bit more open and expansive, and away we go, you know, it will suit us. But as Joe said, you know, these teams in this division, have got flair. Those teams have got flair, but they also will shithouse you, which we just can't cope with at the moment.
Joe, do we ask you how long he's got left from your perspective?
Well, I think when you look at when I spoke about this last week, you looked at the next block of five games, which included the four away games, which was Cambridge, Portsmouth, Plymouth, Wickham. And you look at that five games, and we've just dropped 2 points at the easiest of the four away games that we've got coming up, effectively. And I say we're 15th in League One, and it amazes me, without sort of digging out certain people, about how happy some Ipswich fans seem to be for the standards and expectations to just be lowered on a weekly basis, because this side. This is not a two-year project. This side was set up to get promoted this season. It's why on transfer deadline day, we signed Christian Walton on loan, Bertrand Selina on loan. I'd say if this season just drifts into mid-table, it's an absolute failure. It's a failure if we finish sixth on 75 points, let alone finish 10th or wherever it looks like we're going to finish at the moment. And we are absolutely miles off it. And you can't start saying, oh, well, we've got all these new players. It's going to take time to gel. They've had their time now. And if the results don't come soon, I don't think if at any point in the next couple of weeks, if the results continue as they are, I don't think Paul Cook could have any arguments if he gets in P45. I think if Mark Ashton sacked him today, I don't think he could argue that he doesn't deserve it.
No. Okay,
because you and Joe's right. You know, you've got to look at what happened last season as well. That has to be. I know people are saying, "Oh, disregard last season. Wasn't his squad and stuff." But crikey, you know, his record for the games he was in for last season is just awful, isn't it? And overall, it is just doesn't make good reading at all. But it's the same old. You know, he goes. Who do you approach? Who do you get in?
Well, hold that thought. I've got two names for you later on. One is part of the roundup. The other thing let me ask a secondary question here. Tim Wilkins, Wolves had big money from China a few years ago. I expected them to get promoted straight away, but it took them 2 years. He says, so relax.
Yeah, that was
money is virtually everything. Not in League One. Year,
yeah, it was Championship.
They dropped into League One and went straight back up the following season with 100 points. And then they got the 2 years to get promoted.
Yeah. I guess my thought is we've maybe had mixed messages from the ownership in respect of this. It's a project, but I guess it's a project that they hope to be doing in Championship rather than League One versus, you know, that they better watch out. The rest of the league had better watch out. So surely if to Joe's point, if the owner's target is a playoff position, at least, to Dave's point, you have to do something before that's basically gone, before there's nothing to play for, you know. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks.
And I guess, isn't it?
I mean, we need to caveat this by saying that none of us want to be on this podcast talking about the situations that we are. We all want Ipswich to be doing well. We all love for Paul Cook to be doing well, but we are now kind of a month and a half into the season, aren't we? And, you know, the sample size of positivity is starting to run out. It's almost
too much. No project. There's no project to get out of League One. The project to get out of League One is get out of it as fast as you well can. Yeah. And that is this season. And the squad has been built with that in mind. And you look, let's say you look at the money spent on this squad, and you just simply have to look at what happens if we don't go up this year. Have we built a team? Well, no, because you'd imagine Walton's going to be the first choice keeper by the end of the season. He's going to be gone. Our main striker, Macaulay Bont, is on loan. He's going to be gone at the end of the season if we don't go up. And then you've got Bersant Salina, who's brought in as our sort of number 10.
Talisman. Yeah.
Talisman. He's going to be gone.
Yep.
Hayden Coulson, our first choice left back, is going to be gone. So if we don't go up this year, we'll end up having to get rid of 10 players and bring 10 more in this summer. Yeah. And so people can't claim that we're building for next season, because we simply aren't. We're building to get out of this league in year one, and we're miles off it.
Dave Gort's question, the main weakness obviously is a mental one. There appears to be a lack of clear changes when we can make to a starting 11 that would improve this. Am I wrong? It does seem to be go again with the same team, repeat, and hope we've learned from our mistakes, which is currently no, Dave.
Yeah, tactically, a bit tactically naive. I think Joe used the word naive earlier on, and I think that's exactly where we are. Be interesting to see. I think Penny's perhaps struggled the last couple of games. I haven't really heard a lot about Coulson's fitness, have we?
He should be back next week.
But so saying next week, what?
Saturday rather than Tuesday.
In training, okay. Yeah, it's just incredibly frustrating, isn't it? And what is the answer? Because we have got the squad of players now, and you think it is the squad of players, as Joe said, to get us out of that league this season. But
does Mark Ashton want to recruit a sports psychologist?
Your Bristol City have got one.
Yeah, I'm sure they have a witch doctor or something like that. Yeah,
but I think to Dave's question, there's a mental aspect to the game. There's a confidence, and there's also a confidence from being well prepared and having knowledge of what to do if the game pans out in a certain way, and maybe that's the mental thing that we're not prepared for.
It's just all these games we've been absolutely on top of these games, controlling the games, romping these games, and then just out of nowhere, like their first goal, just out of nowhere. We 2-0, we go into that game yesterday, I'm sorry, 2-0 up at half time. We probably go on to win that game 3 or 4, probably do. But it's just that goal before half time, and again, you just see that fragility right through the team. It just stems right through the side. You could see it. The doubts start to appear.
When the club, apparently, as well.
When you're 2-0 up in a game, you can't toss a coin to decide whether it's going to finish 2-2 or 6-0. You just need to 80% of the time win 2-0.
Consolidate.
That's what you've got to try and do. You don't need to try and win 5-0. You win 2-0.
Hope you don't. You
move on. But again, we sort of heard a sort of similar story from people around the dugout yesterday, that it's just Paul Cook standing on his own on the touchline, no input from the coaching staff, when the game is just totally getting away from us. And
it's weak.
We've heard the same at Cheltenham, we've heard the same at Burton when it's happening. Yeah. And I know Peter Reid is now being given a role now, but is he actually going to be able to get through to Paul Cook in game?
Yeah.
Because that's where it's going wrong.
Yep.
Second half of the games as well.
Mills was interesting. Mills was interesting. He said he fulfilled a very similar role for Trevor Francis at Birmingham. And he said Francis didn't want him on the bench. Francis wanted him up in the stand to get obviously the bigger,
the Joe Royal view.
The bigger picture. Yeah. And he would just come down in half time and Francis would say, "What do you think?" And he said, "But I think that. And he'd take it on board and react, otherwise accordingly. So
Mills actually said that Trevor Francis often let him do the team talk at half time because he's got that bigger perspective.
He's got that overview. So look, you can't knock, Peter Reid, experienced Scouser. you can't knock that. If it's going to assist, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. Let's skip. I know we're kind of running over a little bit, but let's got a few more questions here that let's skip through. Rob Crabwalk, there was plenty wrong with the performance, but ultimately, commas, good punctuation. If we'd had a commanding keeper in goal today, we'd have seen that game out. Discuss. Who wants to take that one? Joe?
There's definitely problems. You can see that the defence don't trust Sladky, and
Edmondson gave him a bollocking, didn't he?
Yeah, but there was twice. One in the first half where you could hear Sladky call, and then Burgess heads the ball away from him, and then Sladky then has a go at Burgess, but then later in the game, I presume Hladky doesn't put a name on it, because Edmondson then comes and has a massive go at him, a huge go, like really in his face, shouting at him. And, but it seems to make Hladky sort of shrink into himself rather than come out fighting. So it just seems that there's not a... Hladky doesn't take sort of pressure off the central defence at all. No. And they don't trust him. It's obvious, you can see when you're watching it. And he seems to have played well the last couple of home games, but the last couple of away games at Accrington and yesterday... We just can't get out of our own way, can we, in those?
It just staggers me that we've got a 6'8", 6'9" keeper on the bench that really still can't really command his area. Because if he did, he's exactly what you're looking for. You know, that second goal yesterday, as I said, was a case in point. You know, you get someone like him, surely as physical and as big, as tall as him, he comes for that ball and gets something on it rather than just, well, obviously, you know, just falling over and getting pushed about. It's... I just don't know. You know, it'd be interesting to see when, as we said earlier, when Walton is finally over his, what was it? We went to that abductor, whatever, isn't it? Yeah. Over his abductor injury. If he comes straight back in, I mean, again,
to my sports psychologist kind of point there, I do wonder whether Hladky's got a little bit of imposter syndrome, because he's one of the few signings that have come up from League Two, actually. And I just wonder whether... I always thought day one against Morecambe, he looked kind of a little bit overawed. But
again, he's got the credentials.
He's got a great League Two
keeper of the year. What is PFA in the PFA team of the year, for Christ's sake? Conceded.
Biggest club that he's played at, potentially. Biggest crowd.
Well, okay, yeah.
Anyway, we'll see what happens.
For a lot of these guys, though, you know, you say that, you know, a lot of these guys that are coming, it's going to be the biggest club.
Burgess.
Okay, put more people like Morsey and that to one side. Burns coming from Fleetwood. Mm. You know, Edmonds put to one side. Burgess. Just coming for, you know, it just is, isn't it?
Mark, I think less of a question here, perhaps. I mean, define progress, define time, question mark. I would say we've progressed, as in we score and often look like we know what we're doing going forward. For him, the time is Christmas, but I don't count last season. In my opinion, he made a forgivable mistakes compounded by player apathy. We know grass rarely greener, I guess. It's important we so both sides of the argument here, and you know, there will be people out there advocating for patience, and I guess the challenge back to how long is your patience, and it depends what you see as success or failure for this season. And I think that's your point, isn't it, Joe? Kenneth Wittenkamp, excellent name. I've got to ask this now I've said his name. Could we have secured a playoff place with Matt Gill as caretaker manager last season? And most importantly, would Matt Gill get more points out of the current squad than Paul Cook? Matt Gill.
I don't think it would. I can't remember the exact figures, but to get into the playoffs last year, across the last 16 games, we only needed to get about another 5 points. And bearing in mind, we lost to Northampton away, we lost to Wimbledon away, we dropped points at Rochdale, we dropped points at Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have taken, we lost at Gillingham. It wouldn't have taken much to get us there. And I don't know, I think we'd have been better off for the top six with Matt Gill in charge for the last games. Because I don't think anyone could have done a worse job than Paul Cook at the back end of last year.
No, I agreed.
Sort of through the summer, I was sort of able to take a sort of philosophical view on it, in that it needed that total collapse in order for Evans to decide to sell and for Game Changer to come in, which leaves us in a bigger position. But ultimately, that's happened now. And unless Paul Cook can get some results quickly, and for me, I'm not saying Christmas. Christmas is too long, because if we carry on where we are, what have we got?
We're way off 40, it.
What are we, 14 points from 12 games, are we?
Yeah. Yes.
There's the league table.
We've got three games coming up next week. So you've got sort of Portsmouth, Fleetwood, and then Plymouth the following Saturday. You've got to win two of those three games, haven't you? You've got to be on 20 points after 15 games. If you're on less than that, you're just absolutely nowhere. And if you're not on 20 points at 15 games, you've got 31 games left. You need basically 2 points a game, effectively.
Yeah, it's going to be worse than that.
Just to get into sixth place, not for second.
Directly after Plymouth, you've got Wickham away 3 days later, so it's probably going to get worse than that.
I think, like, after that Wickham game, for me, if we don't win two, if we don't win one of the next two, but we'd probably beat Fleetwood, won't we?
Beat Plymouth or something stupid like that. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see us play one of the top six. This week, I think it'll be yardstick. You know,
that's the real
not
quiz.
The greatest of form, but these two away,
they're not free flowing sides. These top six teams, so are they? They're not,
but they're there though.
They're there, aren't they? Solid though, aren't they?
They're solid. So these two go, I think. Portsmouth, okay. Fleetwood, Joe said, probably beat Fleetwood, but these two games, Plymouth away and Wigan, will be a real pointer exactly where we are, I think. Really will.
Let's finish with two very quick questions because we are one running way over, but I didn't want to stifle the conversation because I think it's valuable. One for Dave, one for Joe. Dave, Andrew asks, and Run Fat Boy Run, Mick Mills continues to state that Burgess was getting bullied. Is he the weak link in the back four? Would an old-fashioned bruiser like Toto be better alongside Edmondson?
Yes, but that gives you, you know, at the moment... The balance looks better because he's left-footed. So you've got, you know, you've got a right foot, left foot balance. But from a physicality point of view, yes, he just, as Joe said, he just doesn't punch his weight, does he?
No.
That's 6'4". He's got all the attributes. He looks a proper player. 6'4", lovely left foot. Looks a proper player. Something just not. He shouldn't get bullied like he does, and he does, coaching. And he shouldn't be
coaching.
Yeah,
and
well,
Joe. Yanné Solonen, does the appointment of Pierre Reid mean we have appointed an assistant manager without Cook having to acknowledge we needed one?
I don't think so. I think he just likes to have more people to talk about football with, doesn't he? I think that is this is the thing with Cook. And
Pierre Reid played golf.
I feel bad just sort of saying how poor, because he loves the game. You speak to him and he's so passionate and he's desperate to do well here. And
he is.
I don't think any Ipswich fans would sort of begrudge that. We're all desperate to see him do well, but at some point the line's got to be drawn. But he's just a guy that loves football and he loves being here and loves the job and he's desperate to be a success. And I say it's just another person that he can chat football with because that's what he does. Like,
and he does, and Joe, he is, you're right. And yeah, we've both spoken to him and he really identifies with the fans. And you know, he gets this team on a roll. And momentum is what this club needs. We haven't had any momentum in this football club for how many seasons, going probably back to 14-15 for Christ's sake. And if we get that, he's so clearly identifies with the fans, he'll get so much support and it'll be the club will be awesome. But you just at the moment in time, you just can't see it.
You're not going to get that without going back to basics and winning some games, are you? Yeah. You've got to win some 1-0s and 2-0s.
Yeah,
you're not going to. The 6-0 wins against Doncaster, yeah, they're brilliant when they happen.
They're few and far between.
You'd rather win. I know it's the most obvious thing ever, but you'd rather win 3 games 2-0 than 1 game 6-0, 1 game 5-0, and lose the other one, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Guys, thank you for your answers to those questions. And more importantly, thank you to everyone for your questions as well. Sorry if we skipped through them. I do my best to curate that one. But obviously, the guy's very charged up, very motivated to discuss what's going on here today. So we have had to skip through a little bit. Let's have a look at the league table just because I like to depress everyone. Plymouth destroyed Oxford's excellent home record by winning 3-1. Nice solo goal from Garrick in that one and Camara in that one as well. Wickham, a good solid 2-0 away win at Doncaster, set piece headers, and Akinfenwa's first goal in open play in 20 months. 4 wins.
Wow!
In a row.
Did you see the goal from James McLean for Wigan?
Oh, Wowzers. Let's talk about Wigan. Bolton 0, Wigan 4. 50th league appearance for Wigan for Will Keane, who got the goals off and running there. A pearler from McLean, plus an own goal. And Wigan are very upwardly mobile at the moment. Sunderland came from a goal down at Gillingham to win 2-1. We mentioned Rotherham before as well. They beat Pompey 4-1. Pompey off the back of a big win against Sunderland, but bad defending in this one. Shocking delivery and dealing with crosses into the box. A nice goal from Marcus Harness. 3 goals in 4 for him. But really poor goalkeeping, really poor defending. I guess gives us a little bit of hope, perhaps.
I'll put that right.
And the only top six team not to get points yesterday was MK Dons, who Shrewsbury obviously played themselves into some form against Ipswich with a 1-0 win over MK Dons. Wally again on the score sheet. And I think Ryan Bowman, who was subbed off with heart palpitations, was back in action for them as well. So we'll stop talking about League One. Let's talk about Portsmouth. Game on Tuesday. You guys confidence? One win in 9 for them, including 7 defeats. Danny Cowley is under pressure as Paul Cook, perhaps here, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely is. You know, it's gonna be a lively one, isn't it? It's a shame. I certainly would have gone had it been a nice sort of a nice day or so down in Portsmouth, obviously Tuesday evening. It's gonna be lively. Like I said, there's still gonna be a little bit of bad feeling, you'd think, spilling over for the summer. I'm sure fans all remember that. And it wasn't just the Jacobs thing. I mean, it seemed to be that, you know, we were more than anything, I think they've called us checkbook town or whatever, you know, more than anything, you know, we were competing seemingly for the same players week in, seemingly back in the summer, week in, week out. And I think the Jacobs Edwards thing just basically tipped it all over the edge. So it's going to be a lively one. You know, it's so frustrating because, you know, you win at Cambridge yesterday and the old adage, you take a point. You take a point, it'd be a good point at Portsmouth. But now, you know, you've got to be looking for three. But, yeah, with Fleetwood coming up Saturday, you take a point there, given our away record.
Joe, they're not in great form, though. So,
no.
Is there anything to fear?
Well, you can always fear from ourselves, backlash, can't you, when you go for switch. One. But generally, if you look at this game on paper, 7 defeats in 9, you know what you need to do there. Pompey's a sort of fiery crowd. You get there, you shut up shop, early doors, 25 minutes, half an hour. You quieten the crowd down and you just try and get the crowd so quiet that they end up on top of their players and then you sort of just try and strike at that point. But that's not how we set up for games, is it? We don't set up to go there, get 0-0 at half time, and then when the crowd's turned on them, just put them to the sword in the second half. We'll try and beat them in the first half, and then if they get ahead, that crowd will all of a sudden be on our back, and we'll be struggling. But I can't actually watch the game Tuesday, so
I hark back to last season's game, and I know there was no crowd there, but it sort of followed pretty much the same. If you remember, we scored a really nice goal.
James Norwood, wasn't
great
it?
Finish, and then again. You know, game seemingly going one way. Okay, not creating much, well in control. I think we can see just before half time and inevitable second half, we're going to lose the game. So, yeah, we've got to change that pattern. But with Fleetwood, Joe said, you know, we should be going there looking for the win, but it's just this fragility about us again. You know, you just wonder. I don't know. I'd take a point there and, you know, three at home Saturday, and then you've got the big two away games coming up.
The big two. Guys, thank you so much for this. And I hope you've stayed with us because that's fascinating and really insightful debate here. So I've really enjoyed being part of it. So I don't mind us running a little bit long, but I will let you guys get off and enjoy the rest of your Sundays. We will be back, as I said, on Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll stick a tweet out pretty early doors to let you know when to see us, either full time after the Portsmouth game or probably on the Wednesday. And we'll let you know. Back for the pre-match show for Fleetwood and the flagship backers normal as well. Who wants to style us out? I dare go to Dave for one of his specials, but
no, nothing. I've got nothing really other to say. I think I'm following you on the GB show this week, I believe.
Oh, there you go. So Naked Football Show midweek on Wednesday. Join Dave live from 6 or available on podcast after that. So that's good. Joe, do you want to have the final word?
just a plea to Cook to try and actually manage the games, sort of look at the games properly rather than keep doing it, because none of us want the manager to go. None of us want the overhaul that comes with that. We want Paul Cook to be successful, and the only way he's going to do that is if he sort of gets out of his own way and actually tries to manage games properly rather than trying to score a third when you're 2-0 up. Actually win some games of football properly.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.